Welcome to Discoville, where we discuss both Star Trek Discovery and the Orville here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth look at each of these shows and discover that both of them can coexist in today's fandom as they introduce us to fresh, new, and exciting stories, characters, and galactic destinations, and so, so much more. And of course, I am Kyle. I am back in the captain's chair yet once again. My butt impression is perfectly centered now, so it's probably going to be my chair going forward. Sorry, Kevin, you decided to go on vacation 1 week too long. And of course, Amy is off on a very special assignment that we will actually give her an excuse for. It's not even a Section 31 thing. I think it's a DS9 thing. But of course, I still don't fly the Discoville alone. And I have the brilliant science officer. She's also quite good on the phasers. Don't wreck her targeting practice. Don't cross her the wrong way. It gets a little ugly. Of course, the amazing Haley Stoddard is back here helping me man things on Discoville. How are you, Haley?
I am well. How are you doing this fine evening?
Oh, I am doing great because we got phenomenal news over the weekend, which I know we're going to talk about some in Subspace Singles, but we have official word that the Orville will be back for season 3.
Yes, I know. And it's finally out there. It's exciting. So glad to know this. So we'll talk a little bit more, but I'm definitely excited about it. It took them a long time. And all I can say is hold the pickle.
Yeah, exactly. Hold the pickle. Open this jar for me. All of it. I'm excited. I might go singing in the rain. So, you know.
Sounds but like a good idea.
We actually got a lot to cover this week because there's a lot of news and we got a great episode of Discovery to talk about. But before we get to any of that, I'm going to open up the hailing frequencies and tell you where not only you can find Discoville, but all these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network, and you can find them on these subspace channels. It all starts at our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. You can also use the Podbean app on your tricorders or other mobile devices. Just download the Podbean app and search for the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play for you Android device users, and also on Spotify. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Discoville Pod. You can also join our Facebook group where we've got a lot of things going on and a lot of things to talk about. Just look for that Fandom Podcast Network, Discoville Podcast page. You can also contact us directly either via email at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com or at discovillepodcast@gmail.com. You can find me, Kyle, on Twitter at akylew or on Instagram at akylefandom. Haley, where can people find you on social media and other podcasting channels? Because you're all over the place.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Trekkie01D. You can find me in the Discoville Facebook group. And if you like this other show called The Original Series, you can find me over on Trek FM on Standard Orbit, where we talk nothing but anything related to the original series. And I have to say, this week's episode that dropped today was really awesome. We talked about Pike. Just saying.
Oh, it's all about Pike. Hashtag all in for Pike.
Yes.
Of course, too, you can also support Discoville by visiting our Tee Public store. Go to teepublic.com, search Fandom Podcast Network or Discoville, and you'll find all the great gear of Discoville as well as the Fandom Podcast Network, whether we're talking shirts, mugs, hoodies, or other strange things that we put up there. And of course, we'd love your feedback, especially on iTunes/Apple Podcasts, as it's being referred to now. We'd love to get those 5-star reviews, of course, but we love the feedback in general. So, before we talk about this week's episode, we're going to do a little time traveling, which seems very appropriate, Haley, considering we're going to be in next week's Discoville discussing the Orville episode 13 of season 2, Tomorrow and 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 Tomorrow. And yes, no yesterdays, though.
Yeah, and it never ends. It just goes on and on and on and on, and I'm going to start singing Lamb Chop.
Let me change things up here. So this was kind of like, even though it wasn't announced as a two-parter, this was kind of part one of the season finale for the Orville this season, as we are dealing with a time distortion that brings a version of Kelly from the past to the present day Orville. And it definitely has some effects on Ed and Kelly, Ed and current Kelly's relationship.
Yeah, this episode was really interesting. And I kind of like the twist on it, but, you know, messing with time and telling people things and then sending them back in time, it never goes well, ever. This is why you're not supposed to either not let them go back to their time, or you're not supposed to let them know anything, because it just messes with the current time, even if you think it's in a different timeline. And oh my gosh, timelines, the timelines and the parallels, and oh my gosh, the crazy, and Kelly with bangs, I'm sorry, but no.
Yeah, that was a word, but they did a really good, whether it was makeup or CGI or whatever, to make her look younger. So
yeah, I agree with you there. I think it was quite, did a really well job.
And however, I do think what Ed was doing was really, really kind of creepy.
Yeah, it really kind of was.
We'll talk about that on next week's episode of Discoville. But again, we're going to take a quick look back, too, because last week, Kaylee, we discussed one of our maybe all-time favorite episodes of The Orville, and that was Sanctuary. And of course, Amy joined us, and we had Davis Grayson, too, being so kind as to join us. This is still maybe, in my opinion, the best episode of The Orville we've had, Haley.
It really was very well done, incredibly interesting, and very thought-provoking and makes you wonder. So it was a fun conversation, and I think it was neat that we all saw some different things that other people didn't see. It gave us a lot to discuss.
Yeah, no, very much so. And I'm kind of curious to see how much Dolly Parton's iTunes sales went up after this episode. Yeah. But with that, we're going to look at the show we're going to discuss this week. So without further ado, let's head into the Officer's Lounge. This week on Discoville, we're going to be discussing Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 9, Project Daedalus. A quick short synopsis: the Discovery crew infiltrate Section 31's headquarters, and suspicions arise that the crew may have a traitor in their midst. Well, meanwhile, Burnham tries to help Spock, but her efforts don't go as planned. Haley, would you care to read a little bit of the synopsis that we have on this episode?
Sure thing. Do you want me to read the whole one?
Well, you don't have to read the whole thing, but give us the Cliff Notes version.
All righty. So we get to see Admiral Cornwell. She's back aboard the Discovery because she wants to talk to Spock about the murders that he's been accused of. And during this interrogation, which included him being subjected to some sort of really cool lie detector test, he maintains his innocence. And the test shows that he is telling the truth. Well, duh, he's a Vulcan. But this doesn't go well with the footage that we've got going on, so clearly someone is lying. Well, meanwhile, we do have this possible traitor in the midst, and this is sending us to a very interesting location. We're going to go to Section 31's headquarters, and I'm not gonna lie, I was a little nervous and scared for our lovely crew of the Discovery, because this did not sound like it was gonna bode well. Amidst all of this, Spock's still trying to determine what in the world the Red Angel wants with him, what these signals mean, everything that's going on, and also dealing with the revelations from the previous episode with Burnham and going to Talos IV and this relationship that is completely strained between brother and part sister. Well, we get back in Arium, so we get some Arium in this. It's really great. Arium's quarters, she reveals that she once was human, was looking forward to her new adventure with her new husband, and unfortunately, disaster strikes. This was the last day that they were together. Arium became a part android, part human. As a result of this, condition requires her to purge her data banks on a weekly basis. The memories she keeps are those she shares with the rest of the crew. Chats in the mess hall, sparring with a colleague, Burnham smiling at her. These most human of her experiences, of her moments about Discovery among the crew, are the ones Arium archives, and she deletes everything else. So Discovery reaches Section 31's headquarters, but the place is a fortress surrounded by shield-seeking mines? Cornwell apparently knew these defenses, says that they'll be fine. Offers a navigational path Discovery should get to, but unfortunately that doesn't go as planned because these mines start slicing the hull of the ship and threaten to destroy it and everyone aboard. Flying blind, Burnham suggests they try a new tactic, chaotic, evasive maneuvers from random members of the crew. She surmises that the mines are being controlled by artificial intelligence and thus are anticipating Discovery's maneuvers. By performing more chaotic maneuvers, Discovery might just make it through. The suggestion works. Discovery makes it through and is finally hailed by Admiral Pitar. Incensed, Adam Cornwell demands to know why Pitar ordered an attack on a Starfleet vessel. She informs the Admiral and Pike that her order to attack Discovery came directly from Starfleet Command. Pitar indicates the Discovery crew have been charged with treason, and now that Cornwell has been seen with fugitives, she is also charged as well. Cornwell and Pike, however, will not be cowed. They are going to infiltrate the headquarters, and to the mild surprise of the crew, Arium recommends that she join the mission. Well, meanwhile, down in engineering, Stamets is trying to repair Discovery's spore drive, because, you know, this possible infiltrator aboard. And Spock is in there trying to still figure out this Red Angel stuff, and their exchange gets really interesting and kind of fun. But also helpful to both of them. Spock responds that, you know, perhaps Culber wants distance from Stamets, not because he no longer has feelings for him, but because Culber's feelings about himself have changed. Meanwhile, Burnham, Nan, and Arium beam down to the Section 31 headquarters, which is devoid of atmosphere and gravity. Frozen blood hovers around them, but there's no clarification on who was fighting whom. While Nan tries to turn on life support, Burnham and Arium stumble upon frozen bodies. They determine that the victims died at least 2 weeks ago, and one of them appears to be Admiral Pitar herself. Who then was Pike and Cornwell talking to? Saru has the answer. Pitar was a hologram. Saru also indicates that this explains the footage of Spock killing the doctors. That, too, was also a holographic projection. The central computer system at Section 31, aka Control, is behind all of this. The only reason it's allowed an away team on board is because Control needs the data in Arium's databanks. When Pike informs the away team of this, Arium attacks them, yanking out Nan's breathing apparatus and engaging in fisticuffs with Burnham. Burnham is finally able to restrain Arium as Tilly uncovers what it is Arium has uploaded to Control. The data that the Sphere uploaded into the ship weeks earlier is what it's after. With that amount of knowledge, Control could become sentient and invincible. And this is what the Red Angel warns Spock about. This is how the end of the universe will begin if Discovery doesn't stop Arium. Tilly opens a channel to Arium in a bid to get through to her. She sends memories of their friendship to Arium and it works. Arium is back to herself, but her cybernetics are still being controlled. She turns to Burnham, pleading to be ejected through the airlock. Burnham refuses to concede to orders, but it's the universe's safety for Arium's life. Just before Arium is ejected into space, she tells Burnham to find Project Daedalus. As Arium floats in the endlessness of space, her final memory is that of her life as a human, talking about how she and her husband are coming. This episode was intense.
Yeah, this was a very, very intense episode. And I just got to say this too, Section 31, that might be a little overkill on the home security system. I'm just saying.
those were crazy. I cannot lie. That was insane.
Yeah. A couple of things with this episode as far as first reactions. First of all, this episode was directed by Jonathan Frakes, written by Michelle Paradise, and Sean Cochran was the story editor, with Kristen Beyer being the executive story editor. This might have been the most intense and heartbreaking episode of Discovery this season, because you had this great intensity of just everything that's happening at Section 31 headquarters and everything that's building up, plus you had everything with Arium and how gut-wrenching that ended up being. But I really thought they handled all the aspects of this episode very well, with a very nice balance to it that we haven't seen consistently with Discovery this season.
Yeah, it really was well done, in my opinion. I know a lot of people were quite upset about, apparently they wanted people to have emotions and feelings for Arium when we haven't had much of a backstory to her. And I can see their point. It is hard to connect and make those connections and then suddenly get an episode about a character where you're getting a lot of detail and whatnot, and then suddenly they're gone. But in this post-ish Game of Thrones TV era, I think this is going to be the norm now, that we are going to have characters that we're going to just get very little about, and then they're going to be gone. So, I mean, really, it is that how it is. But I think this was really well done. I loved the interactions with Spock and Stamets. It was funny, but it was also enlightening, I think, for both of them. I think they helped each other without realizing that they were really helping each other in their relationships with Culber and with Burnham. So it had a lot to it, but it wasn't so chaotic as some of the episodes that have had a lot to them previously.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think one of the things that really stood out for me with this episode was how they handled Arium. They really did a great job of making you care about her right out of the gate, which I know we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But I do want to hit you with some trivia from this episode, too. The earliest mention of the game Caddis Cot in the Star Trek chronology, it is first appeared as a game enjoyed by Seven of Nine, Naomi Wyndham, and Neelix in Star Trek Voyager. So I found that very interesting. And also, I found this a little fun. At one point in this episode, a signal code is heard starting with Pi. Coincidentally, the episode was broadcast on International Pi Day, which celebrates the famous endless number, which starts with 3.14, which signifies the traditional calendars. March 14th episode was first broadcast March 14th, 2019. A little fun there.
I think, and I did hear that.
Yeah, and then Aria mentions the episode title in her final scan. Now, we also had a couple familiar faces returning. Obviously, a little bit more focus with Hannah Chessman playing Lieutenant Commander Arium. I thought she was phenomenal in this episode. Jayne Brooke coming back as Admiral Cornwall, which I've been a fan of this character since they introduced her. I think she brings a great element to the show when she's on it. You had Ronnie Lowe as Lieutenant R.A. Bryce, Allison Down as Starfleet psychiatrist, and Terra Nicodemo as Admiral Pitar. Didn't go well for the Admiral.
No, it didn't. I'm with you. I have really enjoyed Jayne Brooke as Admiral Cornwell. I really like the character, but I think part of that is just because I connect to her, and later on I'll kind of talk a bit more about it, but you know, she's a psychologist. She's an admiral, but she trained in the field that I trained in, and I feel that connection to this character, and I love that we have somebody who's not from just a straight up command background as an admiral. I think it was really interesting, or a science background. So Admiral Pitar was really interesting. And her character is really interesting because Pitar was a logic extremist. And I'm wondering how Starfleet didn't know they had an admiral that was a logic extremist in their midst. So I'm curious.
One of the things I'm going to say about that, about Admiral Pitar too, is now I understand why Pike hates holograms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Screen only. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. We're good.
I completely agree with you on that one.
Okay, so let's talk about the episode itself. And I want to start with the B plot, or what I kind of felt was the B plot in this episode. And I really think Spock was really the center of the B plot in this episode. Him kind of dealing with everything that happened on Talos 4, kind of, I want to say, getting his footing again a little bit. He gets, when they get back to Discovery, him having to go through the lie detector test. And I thought a great scene with him and Burnham in Burnham's quarters, where they're playing the game of chess, because the chess was a great metaphor for, basically, it wasn't about the game. It was about the mental and emotional chess those two were playing with each other while they were playing that game.
Yeah, and it really was, it was interesting to see him struggle through all of this. I can understand the anger that he still feels with Burnham. So that scene was really interesting. I did not expect him to flip the table. You know, but I enjoyed it because it, again, was kind of that follow through on some of the stuff that had happened before. And I don't think we've had a lot of that in Star Trek up until now. where you have something happen in an episode, and it could be the B plot. It doesn't have to be a major plot point, but something happens and it's pretty significant to a character. And then in the next episode, everything is hunky-dory and they're just fine. And it's, you know, granted, it could be days, weeks, months, years from the previous episode, but still, like, there's an effect and there's a ripple effect. When you throw something in a water, there's ripples, and one leads to the next, to the next, to the next. And I appreciate when we see these characters still kind of struggling in, like, the following episode after something happened. It's follow through, and I feel like we never get enough of that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, I think what really continued was with when he goes down to engineering to help Stamets, and it's almost surprising to see these two have the conversation they end up having while they're basically troubleshooting this s'more drive problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, because it's a very emotional conversation, because they're both trying to get each other to deal with their own emotions in their own unique Stamets Spock way, which that was fun.
Yeah. My question with that, though, is, like, they've got the science lab. Why are they down in engineering? Like, they weren't necessarily there to help Stamets. Like, they were doing their own thing, Burnham and Spock were. So why weren't they doing it up in the science lab rather than down in engineering? That was maybe one thing I was just like, this doesn't make sense. Why are they down here? Why wouldn't they be up in, like, the science lab?
Yeah, I think that's just one of those script things that, hey, this just makes it easier to have this interaction.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I suppose.
So my question on this B plot is, Haley, obviously we're seeing a new iteration of Spock we've really never seen before. And I've been pretty straightforward. I've really enjoyed Ethan Peck as Spock. But do you feel like this iteration of Spock is doing the character itself justice?
I think so, because, you know, yes, we're post the cage, but those early, like, if you go back and you watch season one of TOS, Spock's character changes quite a bit, not just makeup-wise, but kind of behavior-wise in those first, you know, episodes, because he was still Leonard Nimoy and the writers and Gene were still trying to figure out how this character would behave. And even later on in the films, Spock admits that he's on this journey of whether he wants to fully embrace his logic Vulcan part or if he wants to allow emotions to come through and kind of embrace the duality of his being. So I like that we're kind of seeing that in Spock right now, because if we take this in context with the original series, Spock this early on still wasn't fully fleshed out just yet as how his character would behave in certain situations. And given everything that he's gone through, and clearly the Red Angel really just got to him mentally that he had to go to Talos IV, I can see what they're doing and I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to seeing less angsty Spock. If he's still kind of struggling with who he is and, like, how he plays the character and in the role and everything, that's fine, but I'm ready for less angsty Spock.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. And obviously, we know some things going forward, but at this point in this series, it's interesting to see Spock not necessarily in full control of his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But yet here he is trying so hard to be, but it's rare that we've seen Spock have doubt. And I think that is one of the things I'm enjoying, because I think it shows character growth for that character as we learn more where it comes from. The thing I wonder about, though, Haley, is do you feel like, and this is something that Discovery was, I mean, this was going to be an issue with Discovery when we found out the time frame of it. Is it stepping on the original series canon a little too much with how it's handling this? Or do you think it's complementary enough?
I think it's complementary enough that it's not necessarily stepping on any toes. This is Spock with Pike before what we see in the original series because we only get the cage. And then after that, he's with Captain Kirk. And you can see the differences, but even then, beyond that, in that first season, like I said, they're still parsing out how his character is. So I don't think it's stepping on toes because I look at it as we are in between the cage and where no man has gone before. So we're in these Pike is in charge of the Enterprise days, and there's nothing to go on. We can say anything because there's nothing there. We don't know how they were as a crew. So there's a lot that we can say can happen between these episodes and this Spock and what we see with Leonard starting from where no man has gone before and forward.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. And I like the angles and the approach Ethan Peck has taken with Spock. And I think that's, he's has made Spock in this version of Spock, definitely his own, but while still paying compliment to Leonard and Zachary Quinto as well. So mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I give him a lot of credit for that, because that's not an easy thing to do.
No, and it's really not. And, you know, the character in itself, but then the person who initially, Leonard, who played Spock, I mean, that's what people think of when they think of Star Trek, if they're not a Trekkie. And so it's very iconic, and I can only imagine how much of a weight it was when he accepted the role to play this character who we all connect to so well. So I give him props for that. It's incredible what he has done. I am going to have to get used to the new look when we see him at the end of the season. So that was kind of weird because I got very used to bearded, crazy haired Spock. But I'm excited to see where it goes. And I will say, I was scrolling through my notes. One thing that really got to me in this B plot was Stamets getting Spock to think about what made him, Spock, unique as to why the Red Angel chose him. I mean, obviously later on we figure out kind of why the Red Angel chose him because of who the Red Angel is. But I liked that, and it was really interesting with Burnham when he was wounding her just like she wounded him when they were children. And that was just, you could see that he was trying to do the same thing, and not necessarily in a revenge, I'm going to get back at you kind of attitude. It was just, he wanted her to open up her eyes to her behavior and the whole, I have to do it and only I can do it and I'm the savior and it's just me and I'm fighting this fight alone, was really powerful, I think.
Yeah. I find it definitely a very interesting dichotomy between Spock and Burnham.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really are two sides of the same coin, I feel.
Yeah, well, and I mean, in a way they are. I mean, you've got, you know, when Spock tells, you know, tells Burnham that, you know, she's not a Vulcan because she doesn't know how to live it. I'm guessing clearly he doesn't know that Sarek's Katra, that he shared his Katra with Burnham. So she kind of does know. So I think they're both experiencing this duality and this fight of emotions and logic. And which side do you choose? Because, you know, it is interesting, you know, that Spock's wanting to be the more logical one and put aside his emotions. And Burnham's trying to do that, but she's failing at it. So clearly now she's got to realize that she's got to embrace her emotional half. And I think they are that yin and yang for each other.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, let's move on and talk about the A-plot in this, because to me, the A-plot is actually kind of three separate things that all come together, and that is Section 31, Control, and Arium. I want us to actually start with Section 31, because I need to ask you this, because we talked about this a little bit, but I really think this is the episode that really kind of, like, may have put me over the edge a little bit. It says, has Section 31 dominated too much of this season?
For me personally, a little bit too much. And I know a lot of people really like it. They like Section 31. And for you, that's great. I'm glad that you're getting something that you really enjoy. For me, it's just a little much.
I think for me with Section 31 is I like the idea of Section 31. I think there's some great stories to tell. But this is Star Trek Discovery, not Star Trek Section 31 yet. So I feel like in that aspect, we have been a little overdosed with Section 31. And it ties into the fact that now we've kind of really gotten the reveal of who our villain for this season is in this episode, where we were thinking all along, well, is it the Red Angel? And it's not. We find out our villain is actually the computer system Control, which is basically trying to become sentient with getting this data from this spear, and is doing some pretty dirty things to do that. Now, I know a lot of people were speculating early on when we found out it was Control that is this a possibly an early sign of the Borg? And I never really got that impression. I guess it is a possibility. What did you think of Control as being a quality Star Trek villain, basically? Does it feel like something that fits in Star Trek, or does it feel a little out of place? Because an AI trying to become sentient is something I've never really seen, I can say, in Star Trek, because I don't consider the Borg an AI, per se.
No, and I know I saw a lot of that, and people thinking, oh, it's the Borg, and oh, this is the precursor to the Borg, but the Borg are already in existence at this point. We know that. So it's not that they're the Borg. This is a separate entity. And it was really interesting, I think, because you have this program, and that's what it was. It was a program that Starfleet made. And it's gone haywire. And it's really interesting because if you take a look at it, it's not a piece of technology. It's not like your Roomba is gonna like grow legs and like get in a, you know, and become a sentient life being and start attacking you. But it's interesting that we have this program that has done it, and it's devious and it's scary because it's everywhere, because it's a program and it's on every ship and it's in every little device and it could get anywhere. And that's what's really, truly scary, is that you have something that says, I am going to make the decisions because I know how to run things better. And clearly y'all are screwing it up because, you know, we know that it wants to end all sentient life and then it's the only thing left. That's really kind of scary. Like, the Borg were terrifying and they added to their collective and they wanted, you know, they wanted technology and they wanted to learn and incorporate all these different aspects, but they were something tangible. You could see it, you could fight it. It was there, rather than this program that wants to end you, but it's a computer program, and how do you get rid of it? And so that's really, really kind of creepy.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's a very good commentary on today's society. Mm-hmm. Who controls? Sometimes I think the computer programs control how we act more than we do how we act. So, I think it was a very interesting tie-in with how they tied it in with Section 31, as this program was developed to help Section 31 basically police everything. But it's even more impressive how they tie it in with Arium's story. Obviously, we knew from a few episodes back something had infected Arium, and obviously now we find out it is Control. But, you know, one of the things I have really enjoyed about this season of Discovery is the focus more on the bridge crew. It seems like most of the key components on the bridge crew have gotten at least an episode to shine in this, especially early on in the season. But this was a kind of Arium story, and what I liked about this, and I mentioned this earlier, was they really brought you into this character on the humanity side of her right out of the get-go, when we're seeing her with her memories, and the memory she's focusing on is this beautiful memory of her and her husband before tragedy strikes.
Yeah, and that was really, I thought it was really interesting to, even though it was just a little bit, and I know, again, people complained about it, it was more, they wanted more. It really was interesting to find out a little bit more about her and how she is, because we knew that she was an augmented human. That's what she would say. She was an augmented human, but how much of her was still human and how much of her was android, robotic. And, you know, it intrigued me because I was curious as to, like, how she apparently was the only one on their shuttle that had this happen, and clearly they apparently couldn't save anybody else. And, you know, in the next episode, we see they have the scan of her internally. So we see how much is human and how much is not. But, you know, I was intrigued by how much of her was actually human still. And I thought it was a really neat way to bridge between Data and on a human. So it was kind of that middle ground of like not fully robotic, but, you know, still part human. And her memories were just really, I thought that was neat. And that in itself ties into something I wanted to mention, was that she clearly notices that she's losing time. So when Control takes over and is controlling her actions, she's obviously noticing that she's losing this time because nothing's getting recorded during that time frame. And I thought that was really interesting because Data had an internal log that recorded time. And I can't remember, there's an episode where he loses, there's like, for some reason, he notices that his internal chronometer is off from everybody else's, and so clearly something's up. So I thought that was kind of really neat. Clues, that's what it was. So clearly she knew something was going on, and I think that lends to a lot of what else happens with her, between her and Tilly, Non getting suspicious of her because she's kind of noticing little things. I don't know why she doesn't go tell Pike, but hey, you know, so anyway, sorry.
No, I think that's a very good point. And I want to throw that out real quick, too, is I love the fact that we got a little more Non in this episode. Yes.
And I love that she has, like, a skirt. I don't know if it's a full-on dress, but it's awesome uniform. And I have, yes. I believe someone said that she has pockets.
Yeah. No, I was really glad to see more of her, because I really loved her in the early episodes when she was getting a little bit more screen time. And I was glad to see they gave her more in this episode as well. You know, it was great writing and a great writer's trick and how they presented this to really kind of get us an emotional tie to Ariam in this episode too, because the end of this episode might have been one of the most heartbreaking moments of Discovery, period, since maybe when, I think even in a way, maybe even more so from when Culber died, because Culber was shock, but, you know, again, I felt like we had more emotional attachment to Ariam in this one episode than we did when Culber was killed.
See, I'm still kind of the opposite. Like, I was sad when Ariam died, but I knew, I think, because it had to happen, we had to stop her from putting all this data into them. I think that kind of lends to it being so tragic for some people. For me, it was like, yes, Culber was just, now that one for me, I, no.
Yeah. But I think so it was, too, the fact that Tilly used memories to kind of bring Ariam's humanity back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're seeing at the end. We're not seeing Control. We're seeing her humanity. And then it's a great performance in that scene by Sonequa Martin-Green struggling with killing her friend, basically. Yeah.
Although I will have to say, if she had, her eyes had gotten those little red blinks in them and her head had moved that weird way, I'd be like, nope, I'm shooting you out the airlock, like, right now.
Aliens, eject, airlock.
Was scary. Those, like, weird head movements. And I'm like, no, it's creepy.
Yeah. But you know what? This episode executed everything that it had going in it perfect, so amazingly, which brings us in, I think, into right into topic five. And we know how great Jonathan Frakes is, but
yes,
he is getting better and better as a director. And he's on a roll. Last week it was Sanctuary for the Orville, and now this episode, Project Daedalus, this week on Discovery. I mean, he's done a couple episodes of Discovery this year. He also did New Eden. He did Sanctuary. He's done past episodes of both Discovery and the Orville, plus a lot of other things in Hollywood. Is Jonathan Frakes right now one of the elite sci-fi directors in Hollywood, Haley?
I think so. And I know that if listeners want to check it out, if you haven't, check out The Librarians.
Great show. I love that show.
Yeah. And, you know, it's more on the fantasy kind of realm, but I really think that he has grown and is that go-to director for a lot of, I think he could do anything. Gosh, dang it. He's just really awesome as a director. I think he because of his background, he knows how to direct people in a way that makes them excited to be in front of the camera when he's behind it.
Yeah, I think he is very much an actor's director mm-hmm. in that respect. And I think that's why he gets such amazing performances from his casts. Like you said, I'm a fan of The Librarians, too. I don't get to watch as much as I like, but it has two of my all-time favorite TV actors in it, in Noel Wiley and John Larroquette. So that's enough to get me to tune into that show right there. But I mean, you look at his IMDb and it just, there's so much on there. And, you know, I mean, he's done some of the Star Trek theatrical films as well, but I am really looking forward to somebody just giving Jonathan Frakes the full control of a show, because I'd really like to see what he could do with that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I can only imagine. But I think he was in, at least as far as The Magicians, that was his. At least the final season was.
Yeah. You mean The Librarians?
The Librarians, sorry. Yeah. Magicians is another show. Jeez.
Yeah. Great show, but yeah. I'll be curious to see if somewhere down the line he isn't given the reins to something that, with all the Trek that's coming out, if he isn't just saying, Jonathan, do this. But I think he also likes being able to diversify a little bit, and I know he really does enjoy working with the Orville cast as well. So
I know. He's the man.
He is. I kind of think it's like him and Alex Kurtzman are probably running things over there at CBS All Access and what's going on there.
I'd be down for that.
So, okay, I want to get to, finally, before we take a little break here, our favorite scenes or quotes from this episode, and I have a favorite quote because I just love this interaction, and it's Admiral Cornwell to Pike. "I understand this is more than you bargained for, but you cannot abandon the mission, Chris. Whether I can issue orders or not, we have to get a team onto that station and reset control." And I just... everything that Anson Mount does as Pike, and the facial look, the tone of voice he uses, and he's like, "What is it about the look of my face that suggests I've changed my mind?" And it's just classic Pike from this season. It's everything that Pike has been this season. And it was one of the best moments of this episode for me. We need the Pike show again. Every week we say this, we need the Pike show.
Oh, I so agree. Yeah, that was one of my favorites. And one of the scenes that I liked was the cerebral mapping.
Yes.
That they use to determine if the person is who they say they are, and then also to show if they're telling the truth or not. I thought that was really fascinating and really intriguing, because you can't hide the impulses and the neurons firing in your brain. So I thought that was really fascinating. There's no way around that. Like, I know people can cheat a lie detector test, but this, I don't think you could. So I'm totally down with this tech becoming something of a reality. I think that would be really cool. And I think, you know, one of my favorite lines was, you know, Cornwell, she talks, I think her part in this episode was really amazing. You know, she talks about, you know, when everyone's like, "Oh my gosh, why are you allowing this control? And what is it? And why was this okay?" You know, and she talks about the war and that, you know, there were choices made. But she says, she said to Pike, and this I think is just one of my favorite things, "You sat out the war because if we'd lost to the Klingons, we wanted the best of Starfleet to survive. As this conversation makes clear, that means you and all you represent." And I thought that was just so incredible. And Pike's reaction to that when she says that to him, that it kind of takes him aback that, you know, because he felt so bad for sitting out the war and that the Enterprise wasn't there in the fight with everybody else. And I think that was a turning point for him to know that there was a reason for it. And I completely agree that that character upholds those values that Starfleet represents. And I love that, you know, and I think Pike, his line, "Giving up our values in the name of security is to lose the battle in advance." Just, again, I love it. And I'm going to have to say one more, but I have to scroll down and find it because I love it. I like that Pike says, you know, "We're fighting the system itself." And I think that lends back to that what I was saying about control, that they're fighting something you can't really fight. It's in things. And how do you fight it when it's in things and it can leave those things and then go in something else? And yeah.
Yes. We just don't deserve Pike. He's too good.
No, I know we don't.
Well, with that, we're going to take a quick break here so you can find out what else is going on around the Fandom Podcast Network. And we'll be right back with some pretty major news. So hold on to your transporters.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal podcast. The Hair Metal podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at FandomPodcastNetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Well, we hope you're enjoying everything that we're doing here at the Fandom Podcast Network. But without further ado, we got some big subspace signals we've intercepted. So let's dive right into those subspace signals. Something happened, Haley.
It did?
Yeah. Yeah, the Orville has been renewed for season 3, finally.
Yes! Break those jars of pickles, people.
Yes. And of course, just all kinds of great social media things. And Seth MacFarlane, I know, is extremely happy about this. And, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. It's coming back to Fox. The only downside is actually today as we're recording this on Monday, May 13th, were the upfronts for Fox, which is each network kind of does a thing where they're previewing what they're going to be doing this upcoming season. And unfortunately, we are going to have a nice long break before we see any more Orville again, because once again, it will not be back until 2020 as a mid-season replacement, probably coming back after football ends on Fox. I'm glad it's coming back, but I wish we were getting something a little sooner, Haley.
I do too, but at the same time, given how they like to change the days that things air, I'm kind of glad, because then it means that, you know, football is not going to screw with it.
Yeah, no.
How many times have we wanted to watch a show and they've decided to stick it on Sunday night and you set your DVR and it starts recording, but the football game is still going on, and then it jumps into your show and it's halfway through and you've missed the first half and you have no clue what's going on.
Yeah, no, I know that's been a sticking point, and I think for the Orville it really does help the fact when they use it as a mid-season replacement like this, you get pretty much all the episodes without any major breaks within the season as well. So I think that keeps the momentum going. And I think because it works for the Orville too in this aspect, we did not know the status of the Orville, especially with the whole Fox Disney situation. Mm-hmm. So they probably weren't able to really get back to work necessarily. I mean, I'm sure Seth had a few scripts in the can and things like that, but now they can really go to town, and I think it gives them that extra time that they need to really properly do a season of the Orville. I'll be curious to see how many episodes we get, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more information on that as time goes on. But yes, the Orville is back for season three, so we will have Discovery and Orville next year.
Yeah, I was like, Discovery's not coming back till next year either, so by golly, we're just gonna, I think I'm booked for every Monday night from like January to like July for like the next several years.
Yeah, well, you know, that we can only hope, right? But there is Star Trek news, too. And I think this is actually a little significant. Of course, we know about the animated series Lower Decks, and that is coming and is official. Well, they just had their first table read, which is a pretty significant step in the production of a show. I'm really intrigued by this. I'm really looking forward to see what we're going to do with Star Trek with a little bit more adult humor, Haley.
It will definitely be interesting to see. I mean, it's kind of always been there, but now we're really getting something where it's really going to be there. And I'm intrigued by it, and it's going to be really interesting and kind of fun to have like an animated series again. But also this whole Lower Decks idea and going back and going in and talking to the crew and it being about the crew that just kind of are like the, you know, basically, you know, you have your A, you know, you have your actors, you have your A-list, B-list, C-list, D-list. These are kind of like the C and D lists of the crew members. So I'm really kind of excited to see where they take it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But did you know, too, that apparently Star Trek Discovery is the most popular streaming show in the world?
No. Really? That's so awesome. Actually, no. I did hear this news and I was really excited about it because it just flies in the face of all the people who are like, oh, no one watches this show, but I'm going to pay to watch it and then pay to bleep about it. But really, it was doing really, really well. So it's really exciting to see that. Clearly, it took off.
Yeah. According to the article on Screen Rant, they say, according to Parrot Analytics, a data analytics firm who measured demand for TV shows across the globe, Star Trek Discovery Season 2 was a measurable hit. Between April 6th and May 5th, the Season 2 finale, Such Sweet Sorrow, released on April 18th, Star Trek Discovery was the most in-demand digital original series worldwide. Further, it was the number two science fiction series worldwide, narrowly beaten by The 100, which I know that has a very strong cult following, but For streaming shows, at least ranking-wise, Star Trek Discovery came in at number one, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina 2, Cobra Kai at 3, The Grand Tour at 4, Doom Patrol at 5. What's even more interesting is there's supporting evidence that backs up Paris data. CBS had aimed to get 4 million subscribers to All Access by 2020, but on an investors call in February this year, they confirmed they've already hit and surpassed that target. That's awesome. Not just a Star. Yeah, that's awesome. And it just goes to show. I don't think it is just a Discovery thing. I think a lot of people were hearing good things about this Good Wife spinoff, mm-hmm. as well as the new Twilight Zone that Jordan Peele has done. And obviously the growing interest in Trek. And I think a lot of it had to do with the announcement of the Picard show. Personally, I think that was a big player in that, but it's just going to show you that yes, our how we absorb our fandom culture and how we absorb our entertainment is changing quickly and rapidly in a streaming world.
It definitely is, and I think that's great. I mean, I have my subscription just, you know, to watch Discovery, but I also am still like an NCIS fan, and I will watch that till they no longer make it. And I get to watch it now because I have my, so it's more than just that, but I do think that some of these other shows are definitely gonna bump up the ratings and the subscription even more, especially as Picard comes out. sometime in November. Birthday present to me.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit Picard here shortly, but a little bit of interesting news about the cast and crew of Discovery discussing not only season two, but a bit about season three at a recent event in Beverly Hills as they did a Paley. CBS sent the cast and crew of Star Trek Discovery to the Paley Center for a four-year consideration screening and panel for because Emmys are coming up soon. And there was a couple interesting tidbits in there. Alex Kurtzman discussed how a change in the show's time setting was something planned for a long time. We knew early that Discovery would get stranded in the future. Actually, really early. Part of it was recognizing that there were all these canonical issues that had to be squared away. Why was the Spore Drive never mentioned? Why has Spock never mentioned his sister? It goes on and on. And at a certain point, it became clear that jumping them either to the distant past or the far future was the only answer. And the minute you start thinking future, then you have to go further into the future than any Trek show has ever gone, because then you have a brand new opportunity. Kurtzman will also briefly discuss where the time jump of the 32nd century leaves the show for season three. The challenge of season three, without revealing anything, will be how do you reinvent the world and the universe while staying true to everything that Star Trek is. They also talk a lot about Spock. Sonequa Martin-Green has some comments about what she thought about Burnham in season two and how she hopes that in season three she finds some balance. Ethan Peck talking about his own securities when it came to taking on the role of Spock. I found this very interesting. I was hugely terrified. It seemed arrogant that I was suddenly in this reality. I was like, what are they thinking? I hope I get fired. I was maybe going to ruin this for so many people that care so deeply about it. But after 2 months, I was not fired and I was still there. And here we are. He also, real quickly, another quote from him explained how his fears were abated through the support of the cast, especially the show's star. When I went back in for the third or fourth time for the role, I still didn't know what it was. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this if it's not a supportive cast, because it is so scary and vulnerable. The text is so challenging. And I couldn't have walked into a more supportive, beautiful group of people that were every day attempting and succeeding in creating a very special world. Most of my work was with Sonequa, and I couldn't have asked for anyone better. Thank you so much, Sonequa. I think that just goes to show just how amazing, and we've talked about this before, how amazing the Discovery cast is.
Yeah, and I had friends that went to this, so I'm kind of totally jealous that they got to go there and see the exhibit and everything like that. I poo-poo on people who throw canon into things. It just irritates me. And really, people going, why didn't Spock mention his sister? Well, have you watched Star Trek V? Did he ever mention his brother? No. Even in the original series, he never even said that Sarek, the ambassador for Vulcan, was his dad to Kirk, his best friend. Like, really? Get over it, people. Spock doesn't share things unless it's pertinent, and only when it becomes pertinent. He said it himself.
Yeah. And when we talk about the finale, we'll talk a lot more about the aspects of what we think of what's happening with Discovery. But I do think it was actually a brilliant move to really open up the world of Discovery and maybe get away from some of those criticisms it's been facing, whether it's fair or not. So
yeah, and I am kind of glad, because that was something I wanted all along. I didn't want another show set previously. We already had Enterprise. And I was like, really, do we have to go back again? Why can't we keep moving forward? And that's, so I'm glad that we're finally going to kind of get that. It'll be definitely very interesting to see how they do it, just because there is nothing to go off of base except for what we see at the end of like Voyager and the Kelvin film. So you kind of have to take some of that into play, because there are events that are set up. So they might pull in a lot from the books. Who knows? Because, I mean, I know the books expand on a lot of different things, and that could be really interesting and useful information for them that they could use. So we'll see.
Yeah. I'm just going to say this. It makes the Calypso short much more interesting now.
It does.
So we'll talk more about that now. But you know what, Haley? I'm just going to talk about what you found in some subspace signals, because it involves the Picard show. Not only because we have some major news about how it's going to be internationally broadcast, as it's going to be not via Netflix, but Amazon Prime, mm-hmm. for its international outside of North America broadcast. And the fact that Picard is looking to possibly be a bit more of a psychological drama, Haley.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I think it's going to be a really interesting take on this character because things have happened and it's way more, it's, you know, past Nemesis. So he's had a lot to go off of and a lot to think about. And I'm excited for a little bit more of a drama in my sci-fi. I think it's, we've had a lot of techie tech and science and whatnot with Discovery, which is great, but, and we've had drama as well, but I'm really excited to see about this slower paced kind of feel that apparently the Picard series is going to have. And yeah, you're right. It is going to be broadcast on Amazon Prime, outside the USA. I believe they haven't stated whether, how Canada will get it. Here in the U.S., it will still be on CBS All Access, but the last I had seen, there's speculation on where our lovely Canadian neighbors to the north will be able to watch it. They're not sure if it'll be on Space or I forget their other one, but
it's looking like it will be Space in Canada.
Okay.
So what it's looking at 200 countries worldwide. It's a part of a multi-year deal between CBS and Amazon. The show will release episodes on Prime Video within 24 hours of the premiere on CBS All Access in the U.S. and the TV channel Space in Canada. I want to read a quote, though, from Alex Kurtzman talking about the difference in Picard. The mandate was to make a more psychological show, a character study about this man in his emeritus years. There are so few shows that allow a significantly older protagonist to be the driver. It will be very different than Discovery. It will be slower, more meditative. It speaks to the rainbow of colors we're playing with in all these different shows, he said. What happens when circumstances have conspired to not give him the happiest of endings? Hopefully it's a reinforcement of Gene Roddenberry's vision of optimism. He's going to have to go through deep valleys to get back to the light. So, yeah, this is going to be very intriguing. We're going to see a Star Trek I don't think we've ever seen before, Haley.
No, I don't think we do. And I think it's going to be really, it really is going to be interesting. And I'm wondering if it's going to kind of meld some of the feel that Deep Space Nine had with obviously some of the feel of TNG. It's got to a degree, even though as of this point, the only character we have from TNG is Picard, of course, himself. But I'm wondering like if they're going to pull from some of these different aspects to kind of blend something and make something that's really going to, I think, be really moving for a lot of people. I mean, Picard was the captain I grew up with, so I'm going to watch it, but I'm hoping to find some depth and some movement in this that I didn't necessarily get from Discovery. And I'm curious, what do you think about this whole thing with Amazon Prime? I mean, not everyone has it. So here's yet possibly another subscription that you're going to have in order to watch something that you want to watch. Let's add this on to, you know, Disney Plus and your Hulu and your Netflix and your CBS All Access that you already have. So, I mean, yes, it comes with a lot of great content as well on Amazon Prime that not necessarily is anywhere else. You know, we've talked about Farscape being on there. And obviously you get great shipping rates, but you know, it's one other thing to add on. What do you think about this move?
This is something though that, I mean, Amazon's making some major, major plays right now. Obviously they have the Lord of the Rings series coming as well, which is going to be absolutely huge on Amazon. They have The Expanse now, and that's the exclusive place where you can find The Expanse. Amazon is adding more and more original programming. And this is truly the battle now. It's not network television anymore. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It's the battle of which streaming network has the most original content you want to see. And I think right now we're looking at a kind of a three-headed battle. I mean, yes, CBS All Access is kind of down a level, but I think the big three are Netflix, what Amazon Prime is doing, and of course, coming later this year, the Disney Plus app. So it's going to be very interesting. I think CBS is in a tier below those, but mm-hmm. now tying themselves in with Amazon Prime, at least for international distribution, I think is a big thing because you cannot get CBS All Access internationally. You can only get it here in the States. So what a better vehicle than to cook into Amazon in this aspect as well. So I think it's a smart move by CBS, and it's going to play out very interesting as well, and just a boon in the hat for Amazon. So the next year is going to be a lot of changing for our entertainment value, and it's going to be fascinating to watch.
I completely agree.
So, well, with that, I think we've kind of covered everything we needed to cover in the subspace signals. Do you have any last thoughts as we head out of this week's episode of Discoville, Haley?
You know, I don't. I got nothing.
I'm going to let you finish off whatever wine is in the ship's storage bays before Amy gets back, though. I think you know, she's forfeited that.
Yes, she has.
Yeah. She better come back.
Doctor says to have one glass a day and a bottle's a glass.
Well, just because you synthesized that, you know, 10-gallon glass. It's very interesting to watch her drink out of that, too, I must say. But with that, of course, next week we turn on our next continuing mission here on Discoville. We will be looking at the Orville, episode 13, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. So until next time, we will see you next week, and hailing frequencies are now closed.